Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
Sophie, just another distressing episode again for people to hear these and people to check themselves. Sophie, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
What happened? It's in Aldi.
So yesterday I was going to Aldi around 5:30 and I was going with my son, he's 2.5.
Okay.
And I'm a single parent and I'm very much on my own, and we can't see my parents at the moment because they're also in self-isolation, so I have to bring him to the shop. There's no way around it. But, you know, so yesterday I went into Aldi around 5:30.
Okay.
I was walking in the door and I was on the right-hand side. There's the table to sanitize your hands and get gloves and all that. So I was just getting ready to do that when all of a sudden this person in front of me just turned around and started shouting at me and telling me to get back, that I'm not 2 meters apart from him. And it took a second to register what was happening.
Yeah.
And I had my son like standing next to me. So I took a step back and then he shouted, get back further, just very aggressively in my face. Told me that I had no respect bringing my child into the supermarket. I was completely lost for words, like embarrassed, humiliated, and I didn't know what to say. Other customers were coming up saying, don't mind him, like he has no right. And at that stage, I left because nothing was that important. I just wanted to leave. But I just think that it's unfair for people to assume that you're not doing your bit, you know, and people policing each other, like things are going to break down very quickly if that keeps happening.
Yeah.
You know, like if everyone does their bit and in a sense mind their business to a degree until we're given stricter guidelines.
And was there, like, were you even accidentally close to him?
Potentially, yes. But then as soon as you said that, like, I did take a step back. But I mean, I think that it's fair to have a little bit of empathy for people too, that this is a new concept and definitely follow it. But
we can't all, we're not going to turn into rats now. That's the hopefully, and people have to understand, people have burdens on their shoulders. For example, you had no choice but to have your child with you, from what I'm reading in your call.
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I wouldn't let him run around or anything like that. I was literally just going in for milk. And
you've no family except your elderly parents.
Yes, I have sisters. They all live abroad, one in Belfast. So, I mean, it's tough for us at the moment, just being one-on-one. So even the shop can be a bit of a breather in a sense, but now obviously it's not. But I don't think people should be shouting at each other. And
when he said to you, why, I presume your son could hear this, by the way, he's shouting at you about your son being there and acting irresponsibly. Did he expand on that? Did he mean it's only one person per shop, or is this it's semi-mythical at this stage, in that it's not been proven, according to Professor Martin Cormack on this programme last Friday, that children are super spreaders, I think was one phrase that he rejected, and that they're silent vectors. Is that what he was alluding to?
I there's a lot going around, and that in itself is contagious. Then people are just spewing misinformation at each other.
Yeah.
And
you left the supermarket.
I did. I was tired and I was lost for words. I was berated in front of my child. I wanted to leave, and I don't think I shouldn't have had to leave. I guess it was my choice, but just to continue shopping after that kind of verbal assault.
Steve, and how are you today, Sophie?
I'm a bit shook, to be honest.
Okay, you sound it. And how's your son? Yeah.
He's fine. He's here having a snack, and he's 2.5. So,
good lad. Okay, stay there, Sophie. Danielle.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
What happened? You?
Very similar to poor Sophie there, but we weren't in a shop. We were out yesterday. Took my 10-year-old little boy out. He has severe asthma, so I'm being very careful of him. This was his first time out since the schools broke up.
Okay.
Beautiful day yesterday, so we went to a local forest. Now, we were far enough away from this person that she had to shout at us. My son was walking beside me. He wasn't running around. He was literally beside me holding my hand. I won't repeat the language that was used about my son, but it was along the lines of, the germ-ridden little, you know what, shouldn't be outside the door, and how dare I put her health at risk while she was out walking in a forest as well. And now my son he came home in absolute floods of tears because it was aimed at him. And he doesn't want to leave the house now. He's afraid to go out again in case somebody else shouts at him.
So this woman, out of the blue, why did she, what was the phrase she used? His germ-ridden body.
I should be removed, or something along the lines of, how dare I bring his germ-ridden self out and put her health at risk while she was also out.
All she saw, Danielle, was a child.
Yes, my little boy walking beside me holding in my hand.
You weren't pushing a hospital trolley with a child mummified and strapped onto drips. It's an awful image. It's because he was a child that she launched into this attack from a distance.
Yeah, and, you know, shout at me all you want, and I'm sure Sophie would agree with me. Shout at me all you want, I'm an adult. But don't aim it at my son, you know. He's only a little boy, and he's actually quite a quiet little child anyway. And this really bothered him, and he came home in floods of tears. And now I said to him, look, people are scared. People are saying things they don't mean. And this tried to placate him. Said, look, we'll try again tomorrow. And he said, no, I'm not going back out in case somebody else shouts at me. And have I got it? And it made him scared. Because now he's saying, have I got loads of germs? What's wrong with me? I was trying to keep as much of this away from him as I could. Because, I mean, at 10, they catastrophize everything anyway. So I was trying to keep him balanced and doing his work, and, you know, and I just thought yesterday, look, let's get out. He was beginning to get that sort of pale look because he hadn't seen air for days. And I said, look, it's a lovely day. Let's go for a walk. The forest is literally, I don't even need to go near a town. I can see it now. I'm looking across at it now. Okay. It's 10 minutes away from my house. And I just think people just need to remember that we're all in this together, and a bit of kindness and decency. Or else, as Sophie said, this is going to break down completely.
Yeah, well, hopefully people are listening to this, and
I hope
we'll check them out. Mm-hmm. Now, what's your plan, Danielle? If yourself and your son go out again, are you going to stay closer to your house?
To be honest with you, Joe, I couldn't stay any closer to my house. As I said, I can see the forest from where I am. I walk out of my house, I walk past two other houses, I cross a road, and I'm into the forest. I haven't brought him down the town. He hasn't been in a shop. He's gone with his dad in the car a couple of places just for a drive, but he hasn't gotten out of the car. We've done everything we've been asked to do for his sake and for everyone else's sake, because if he had something, I would hate anyone else to catch it from him. I'd never forgive myself. But it just seems harsh that, you know, we're turning on each other now. I mean, what happened to Sophie and Aldi? I would do exactly the same thing. I would have been so embarrassed. I would have walked out as well.
Yeah.
I kept it together.
Okay.
For the sake of my son, I felt like turning around and shouting back at her, but I wasn't going to show myself up in front of him. So I just said, look, come on. And I took him by the hand and said, look, let's just leave.
Okay.
So unfortunately, our walk was only about 5 minutes long.
And how is he today?
He's okay. He hasn't said too much. I'm not talking about it because I don't want to bring it back up. But he's quiet. You know, I said, look, will we go out maybe at the weekend? We can go out with Daddy. And he said, no, I don't want. And he said, well, maybe if Daddy is there, nobody will shout. So, I mean, that's sad.
Hopefully he'll get his mojo back, so to speak, in the next couple of days. They're very resilient.
They're missing school, which I thought I'd never hear myself say.
And their buddies and little pals. And what age? 10. He's through all. School I know, the confirmation was cancelled, so that was a great day out for all of them. So they were upset.
Yeah, it's tough on them.
Communion.
It's tough on kids too.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
Bit of decency.
Here. Okay, Danielle and Sophie, you're united there. I don't know where Danielle. What part of the world are you in? Where are you?
Oh, this is Sophie. I'm in Galway.
And Danielle, where are you?
I'm in Wexford.
Okay, well, Galway and Wexford are united in. Insofar as a metaphorical hand-holding there between Sophie and Danielle, because you've gone through the same abuse.
Yeah, can I just say to Danielle, that's just horrific, and I'm so sorry that, like, no one has the right to yell at you.
Exactly, Sophie,
same
for you. What you went through yesterday was horrible as well. I mean,
and rare, like, that literally never happened. So this is obviously obviously people, like you said, they are panicking a little bit. But to take it out on each other is like the worst thing that could happen.
And to abuse children in that sense, verbally. Yeah. Okay, Sophie, Danielle, thanks. Okay. Thanks indeed. Sinead also. Carol, good afternoon. You're back from?
Australia. Hello.
How are you? And when did you come back?
I came back late Thursday night.
And why did you come back?
So I was working over in Australia for the past year as a nurse. And my mom passed over that the HSE were looking for doctors and nurses to come back.
Yeah.
So I said I would come back before things get worse.
And you want to come back a nurse, have you? You're a qualified nurse.
That's correct. I'm currently a qualified nurse. Okay. Yes, that's correct.
So what's the problem?
The problem is I obviously put in my details on the HSE and I was told to contact the NMBI after being given the chance of a job in a major Cork hospital when I phoned the NMBI, who are the regulatory body for nurses. They advised me that the current waiting time to be processed is up to 90 days and that I would have to pay a €350 fee before I even get the application form.
Shit, that's crazy.
I know. I'm here twiddling my thumbs now, waiting for all of this to come true, which could take up to...
So the Nursing and Midwifery Board of Ireland...
Yes.
...have said, even though you can prove you're a registered nurse, can you? I presume you can, Carol.
I can prove that I'm a nurse, yes, but I'm not on the registry body for Ireland.
Because of what you studied in the UK or whatever.
I studied in Scotland, yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. But should we recognise those qualifications?
Well, you would think so. I mean, I come from a background of respiratory nursing and emergency department nursing for the last 4 years. So you would think my skills would come in handy at times like this.
We need you. We definitely need you. And the 380 there's a registration fee. I think there's an annual.
That's correct. Yes, but to get the application pack is €350.
But they say they'd waive the registration fee, is that the...
I haven't even got to that point yet. I'm presuming that hopefully they will, but in order to get there, I need to get this pack, which will take up to 90 days for it all to go through.
And can it be expedited? In other words, Carol, could you scan and send them your qualifications this afternoon?
No, they've asked for the form to be sent through the post.
Ah.
I know.
Emergency. Well, I don't want to be too. No circular firing squads at the minute, or ever. Hopefully, that doesn't help anybody. But we'll get on to the end. If they're listening, we don't have the staff to get on to all these places. But if they're listening, NMBI, can something be done, or even someone in the department, can something be done to expedite this? People aren't coming back and going, I know this helps, but people aren't coming back from Australia pretending to be medics.
No.
And
I know other girls coming back, so I'm not the only one. You know,
and are they in the same quandary, that 90-day rule?
If they don't have their Irish regulatory body, yes. Registration, yes, they are. And I know the majority of my friends, even from Ireland, trained in the UK.
Yeah, of course, we know that. That was a phenomenon. Now, it looks like, bizarrely, this pandemic has flipped that a lot, because I've heard of lots of medics coming back from Australia and from the UK.
That's correct,
But why don't we make it easier for them?
I know, you would think it would be easy, but I mean, a part of the form that I'm going to be filling out now is proof from the university in Scotland that my course was taught through English.
Oh, God. Are you serious? Yeah. You're serious, yeah. Karen.
I wish I was joking.
They want proof from the university in Edinburgh that you were taught through English.
That's correct, yes.
That told you here is my jaw hitting the desk. Emergency, what emergency? Stay with us, Carol. Edel Moore. Edel is also in the medical profession. What's happening in your situation, Edel?
Hi, Joe. I'm a second year general nursing student in Galway.
Okay.
And the second years, both second years and the first years, have been asked to recommence placement. Every the second years do 15 weeks unpaid work on placement every year.
Okay.
And that's fine. Everyone does that. That's never a problem. But right now we're being sent out on placement into areas, putting ourselves at risk and losing our jobs because of it, because a lot of the students, their jobs will no longer take them back because they're in higher risk areas. And we're not getting paid for it. There's no... We're getting nothing for it because it's placement. So we're out putting ourselves at risk for nothing. And we've got families, we have bills to pay as well as everybody else.
So it's, you're saying it's first and second year nursing students?
Yeah, they're the ones at the minute that are due to go out on placement.
Ah, okay.
And then for every other year, our colleges had sent out, like for across the campus, we got an email stating that everyone has to, you know, the college is shut down. So it's basically to stay at home. So any other students, apart, like we're told to go, and if anyone was on placement, then that was pulled. But the first and second years were asked to recommence placement and come back out. So we're being put back out. So our placement still goes ahead.
Yeah. And so you're not being paid.
And we're not being paid.
And explain to me about you lose jobs. What jobs are you? Explain. Are you in part time jobs or?
Well, there's a lot of students, the student nurses that are working in care homes on their days off.
To augment the fact that they get either no money or very little money.
Yeah. They have part time jobs, but not just working in care homes. I mean, you can kind of understand that why they wouldn't want the cross contamination of two healthcare facilities. But people who are working in shops are also, they've also been told, if you choose to go back on placement, then I'm sorry, but we can't take you back here because you've been in a high risk area.
Yeah.
So you've basically got to choose, do I carry on? Do I fulfil the hours that the NBI have asked me to do in order to gain my complete degree at the end of my 4 years? Or... Do I lose my job?
But Adele, have any of you together or individually said to the powers that be in NUIG that this is not only dangerous, but it's unfair and unjust?
There is emails going back and forth. We've all said it, that we all feel like pressured into going back. That we were given a choice if we wanted to go back or not. But the way that the choice was put across was... if you choose to go back, then that's great. And if you don't choose to go back, then that's okay too. But we don't want this to look bad on you in future if you don't get all of your hours fulfilled. There is a specific amount of hours that the NBI have asked for the second years to complete. And this has to be done before you finish your degree. And if it doesn't get done now, then we're going to have to find other times to get this fulfilled. And if that's not accessible or feasible, or if it can't be done in time, then we won't get our full degree at the end of it.
So you really are stuck between a rock and a hard place if you don't do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And stuck in a rock and a hard place if you do it.
And who's insisting on this? Is it who has the power? The NMBI or NUIG?
Well, the information that we have got is that the HSD, the NMBI and the colleges themselves had come together and decided that learning placements and learning opportunities would still go ahead to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
So it's a group decision. So we're still getting sent out. You know, we don't mind, like, if we had a choice to go out, I mean, we do have a choice to go out, but if we could go out and if we were even just to be able to have the peace of mind that, okay, I'm going to get paid for this, so I know I'm not going to be reliant on, well, living on fresh air, not getting any payment.
Okay, these are extraordinary times and call for extraordinary action and extraordinary sensitivity as well in terms of what seems at times gobbledygook paperwork. I know, like the proof for Carol to have to prove that she was taught her highly intensive nursing course and she's been working for 4 years and she's working in respiratory care and A&E frontline. To be told you have to prove in writing through the post that your course in a Scottish university was taught through English. Rachel, 51551, wash your hands. Rachel, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
What's your situation, Rach?
Well, I went back to school as a mature student in the US and I came home to Ireland 2 years ago and had actually started the process with NIMBY for registration. I had to fill out an international application form, which cost, I'm not sure if it was $300 or $400. And the information that they required, it just seemed to be endless, wanting to know the credit hours for each individual part of the course. My professors in the college that I went to were dumbfounded. They just didn't seem to be able to fill it out correctly for NIMBY because it kept kind of going back and forth.
And
so
I'd,
eventually...
Yeah?
Sorry.
No, go ahead. So eventually...
Eventually, NIMBY refused registration for me. They won't accept my bachelor's degree in nursing.
Because it's from the USA.
That's correct.
And what's their objection?
Their objection is that I don't have enough theory and clinical training hours when I was training to become a nurse. Now, there is different there is a different clinical hours is completely different. We don't go out on the floor for 6 weeks at a time. It is completely different. But when you graduate, you're a graduate nurse for about a year afterwards. So that's kind of like your clinical training.
Yeah, and, you are a fully qualified nurse now.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
And in fact, the governor of New York has emailed myself and a lot of other nurses that are not actually working in the United States and has asked us to come back.
But you're here in Ireland offering your services in a national emergency where a plea was put out from the Taoiseach across all the authorities. If you have medical experience, please come back to work or please come to work. So you're sitting...
I'm ready, willing and able. I'm sitting at home going crazy.
But then on the other line beside you there is Idel, who's a student nurse in second year, isn't it, Idel?
You're second year.
Which is brilliant. But Rachel, you have, this is not you personally, Idel, but you have more experience than any student nurse, obviously. You're a graduate nurse.
Yes.
And they're saying...
And I'm not putting down the student nurses at all.
I know you're not.
Yes, I have worked in MedSurg. I've worked with people that are on ventilators, in quarantine. I don't know what to say. I can work anywhere except in Ireland.
Oh, you can work. Can you work in the UK? I don't want, we want you in Ireland, but could you work in the UK, for example? Will they accept
it? If I do an exam, they will accept it, absolutely, yes.
Okay. Well, is there an exam here you could do in a hurry?
Let me rephrase that. I heard through the grapevine.
Okay.
That if you have enough clinical hours, they may get you to make up some hours. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
But nobody's able to figure that out.
Okay, well, the NMBI need to clarify why they're holding firm to such, as I say, some bizarre hurdles, like training through the English language and evidence in writing through the post and the world we
Everything
live
in. Has to be done through the post, yes. And you can't photocopy anything. It has to come direct from the institution where you're trained.
Oh, wow. Okay, let people hear this. Rachel, I can hear the frustration in your voice, but what people might say, Rachel, from your own personal safety, and I know so many, countless thousands have put their personal safety, people are being extra vigilant, by going to work in hospitals every single day. But from your own personal safety, Rachel, are you better? Do you follow me? How did take me through that curve, that debate in your head?
I suppose nursing was in my family background, and I care a lot. And when I see people that are sick and I've worked with people that are sick, I want to help them. And if you have the proper gear, you do your best.
Yeah.
It could be me that is in the hospital and needs help. So I want to help.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Rachel. Well, let's see what develops. Idel, likewise, and Carol, home from Australia, like so many. Let's hope this logjam can be smashed wide open, just the way other things have been smashed wide open. They should have been smashed wide open many, many years ago. But the emergency has precipitated a lot of radical action, and a lot of it is for the good, it seems, in terms of. Work especially. Rachel, Idel, Carol, thanks indeed. 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on
1850-715-815. And Joe at RT.ie. And banks again. The statement from AIB yesterday was pretty clear after listening to the programme and the callers that everyone is entitled to a 3-month moratorium regardless of situation, location or indeed employment. contracts or otherwise, or whether they are have money in a bank account. And what happened in your case on the moratorium?
Good afternoon, Joe. I phoned Ulster Bank this morning to get a moratorium on my loan, or a freeze, I would prefer to call it, on my mortgage. And I went through the process, and the girl informed me they were uninvited with calls, which I totally understand, and I could do it online either. Mm-hmm. But I quickly answered her, or I quickly asked her, I said, where does the 3 months go to? Does it go to the end of my loan? So she told me, no, it would be calculated over the duration of my loan that was left.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had no choice in that. Now, I know, I'm aware that other banks are offering it to go to the end of the loan. I was under the impression that was the case because it's a freeze. But Ulster Bank are calling this a holiday. Now, I didn't request this holiday. I feel we're all in the same boat. We're all affected by COVID-19. So every bank should be doing the same thing. They should have the same criteria. They should be treating each customer the same. Now, I have a tracker mortgage, and I can only presume that's why I can't put mine to the end of my mortgage. But again, she wouldn't clarify that for me.
Okay, so they're saying, which I think might be the case in other banks, that once the 3 month moratorium ends, they will immediately up your monthly repayment to recoup instead of tagging the 3 months on at the end of the term.
Yeah. Now I know permanent TSB, some customers have had theirs tagged on to the end, so an increase of 3 months to the duration of your mortgage. Now that wasn't made clear enough for me. So when the minister had his meeting with the banks, those things obviously weren't trashed out. They aren't all doing the same thing. And it's very unfair because we're all in the same situation. I shouldn't talk to somebody that has gotten that. And I can't.
Yeah.
I'm very, very annoyed about it. That's the Ulster Bank stance on it. That's what's on their website. They're calling it a holiday. A holiday is something you request from the bank if you take a career break or if you cannot work due to illness and you're not getting employed by, not getting paid by your employer. I'm not looking for a holiday. I didn't want to be in this situation.
Yeah. George went to the EBS. George, what happened for your 3 month moratorium? What happened?
Yeah, I was listening to you yesterday, Joe, and at the end of the show, when you said the AIB have said, look, it's across the board and there'll be as little hassle as possible. That's the feeling I got from it. So I phoned the EBS and I was transferred to the ASU unit, and I spoke to the guy and he said, yeah, you went to COVID-19, has affected your business. I'm a self-employed decorator, Joe, so a lot of my work has dried up just in the short term. We've been very, very busy all year, so it's got too bad. So I said to him, look, I'd like to apply for the 3 months break just for some insurance. I'd probably be all right, but just to give me a little bit of a safety net, just in case. And he said, yeah, that's no problem. He said, that's fair for you. So he said, give you your details. So I did. And then he said, oh, Mr. Coburn, he said, you entered into an agreement with us 6 years ago on a split loan, a split mortgage agreement. I said, that's right. I said, and there's been no problem ever since then. We're back on track and everything is great. I've agreed to all the rules. I can see that, he says, yeah, but unfortunately, he said, because you entered into that, you're outside the criteria for the COVID-19 assistance. So I said, oh, I said, that's a shame. I said, can you do anything else? Well, we can give you interest only. I said, okay, how does that work out? So he said, OK, Mr. Tobin, we give you the thing and it'll be 118 a month. And I said, oh, that's OK. I said, can we go with that? He said, yeah, sure. He says, I'll just write down some details here. Then he said, you know, this will affect your credit rating. So I said, no. I said, I said, I can't do that. I said, sure, I'm just, since the previous trouble, I've spent all my time trying to build my credit rating. So I said, you're going to take it away if you do that. Well, he said, that's the only thing I can do. If you don't do it this way, he says, you can't avail of anything. So I said, well, look, well, I'll tell you what, I said, if I just don't avail of anything, and I said, if things get worse, I just don't pay, I still lose my credit rating. So why should I jump through hoops? They wanted a financial statement. They wanted a bank statement and fill in a financial statement, and they wanted all sorts of stuff. So I said, look, you're really just making things very difficult. And it's not only the COVID, it's going beyond that. When you sign into this agreement, at the time, we were all kind of a little bit desperate, and we took any help that we could get from the banks. And since then... my credit rating has been shot, really. As I said, I worked for myself. I needed access to credit. I didn't get it, so I just had to work extremely hard to get a fairly new van, a fairly new car. I just had to work because I couldn't even get an overdraft. I still can't. And this is just sort of highlighting that now, you know. But more and more, as Joe, what happened when I got off the phone, I just felt they had no empathy. And I kind of felt sad looking around the country the last couple of days and how fantastic we all are. People I see are just... They're down, but they're showing some great spirit, you know. And then you deal with these other people and they just kick you.
Okay,
it's like when you're down, they want to keep you down, you know.
Okay, well, a statement in from BBS, who are owned, by the way, by AIB, EBS is updating its systems to implement the 3-month mortgage break. So that this is very similar to the AIB statement yesterday. So that all customers impacted by COVID-19 will qualify for the break. We apologise to any customers who are experiencing frustration while this situation is being worked on. If impacted customers are willing to pass their numbers on to us, we will arrange for a call back.
I guarantee you, I'll phone them when I get off the phone and there'll be something else. Anyone that entered into a deal with the bank 7-8 years ago, we are the bad apple. They don't want. It's my experience is that they really, really don't want to have any dealings with us at all. It's like we're the virus to the banks. That's exactly, and it's a shame because they have absolutely no empathy. But, and they don't deserve us. They really don't deserve to be operating here because we're just such a good nation of people.
And while we provide the 3-month break for impacted customers, we may also propose an additional longer term solution for a more sustainable mortgage.
I'm not interested in that. I just want a little bit of a safety net. Again, I said to the guy on the phone yesterday, I probably won't use it. I'm very busy. I'm grand. Because other people might be as busy. It's just a little bit of a safety net just because we don't know what's going on the road.
Well, will you keep in touch?
Oh,
well,
Joe, I'll tell you.
You're predicting what's going to happen, but...
it's been my experience, Joe.
Okay.
You know, I think that, once you're down, you're down with these guys. And not like the rest of us, unfortunately.
And is your work gone, George?
No, it's not, Joe. No. We're busy enough now. We're not very, very busy. I'd say about 50% of it's gone. But it's only temporary. It's fine, you know. We'll be back. We're good at what we do. We're professional painters and decorators, so we'll be flying again in no time.
Well done,
you know,
okay.
And I hope everyone out there keeps the chin up, but this will pass, I'm sure, you know.
Okay.
And we'll probably be better for it, Joe.
Do you think so?
I think so, yeah. I think people will be more understanding and more respectful of what's going on around us, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because I was minded this. We had Donny Anderson on yesterday, who's a Dublin farmer, George.
Yeah.
One of the few, I think. He's a sheep farmer up beyond Talla. And he was, it just struck me listening to him, like, this is one of our unique, apart from our humanity and community and sense of togetherness and sense of humour, that's why our tourism is so big. And but also in terms of the backbone of the country, there's some things that are like the food industry. We have it, other countries don't, that we should cherish. And good people like yourself, who I'm sure not just bring colour and rainbows to people's homes. I'd say the gangy are men and women working together are a bit of laugh as well.
We have great fun, great.
I know. It's missed.
I could just tell you before, have you ever seen so many people walking in the park? Now, I know maybe it's not the right thing to be saying, but, you know, old couples, elderly couples out walking. I think it's fantastic. People, you know, out and doing what they can and everyone pulling together. Except for the other crowd, but anyway.
Okay, George, thanks indeed. Mind yourself. What's your own situation at home, Anne?
Yeah, well, both my husband and I are out of work, and I don't want my repayments to increase by 40 euros a month. I just don't want that, and I have no choice. But if I was with another bank, I would have a choice. I just think that's not clear enough for me.
Like,
I phoned the central bank, and they were under the impression that when the meeting was had with the minister and the banks, that he asked them to put the 3 months to the end of everybody's mortgage. I'm still trying to get that cleared up.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well,
I'm in a situation where if I take it, that's the way it is. I have no choice.
Okay. Well, everything is happening so quickly. It's good. It's good for the powers that be to hear all these stories.
Yeah. I just wanted to let everybody know my experience.
Okay. And thanks indeed. Thanks, Anne.
Take care.
I should mention, I mentioned it numerous times yesterday on the programme, that the short story competition that John Byrne launched on this programme this day last week, by the way, the 7,200 prize money, and a significant amount of that John Byrne put up himself. But anyway, the short story competition was closed yesterday at 5 o'clock, and I mentioned that numerous times. Now, some people are upset because, and this was also in the context of everything being done so quickly last week, the initial closing time, I think, was going to be today. But anyway, John was with 4,000 entries of short stories, 4,000 within, what, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. John was overwhelmed, and he's lassoed and harpooned and corralled an incredible slew of Irish writers. From Roddy Doyle to Alex Barkley to Claire Kilroy, the Donal Ryan, the list is incredible. He's Cecilia. He's lassoed all those people in to be judges. But 4,000 now is enough for John to be going on with at this stage. Seriously, I know some people. I didn't see as many as I thought there might be. I know some people got upset yesterday. Oh, it was 5 o'clock. We thought it was going to be tomorrow. Let it sit at that. John is doing his absolute best. Let that be the end of it. It's going to be good fun. But remember, there are other competitions, short story competitions, specifically aimed at children in this emergency on at the minute. The one I'm looking at on the RT screen is from RT Junior, and that has a short story competition. So if you go on to RT Junior, you can, if your child didn't manage to get into John Byrne's competition, they can get into RT Junior's one, and I'm sure there'll be more to come as well. So well done, John Byrne, and all those fantastic writers, and National Book Tokens, $7,500 in prize money, and we'll bring you the winning entries in a week or two, once those fantastic authors are not the sluice gates of Ardna Crusha don't open and swamp them in reams and reams and reams of paper. But it sounds a fantastic idea. I'm dying to hear the stories. 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Joe at rt.ie from anywhere in the world, including Australia. Obviously, Dermot, your daughter is where at the moment and what's happening?
She's sitting in the airport in Perth. Yeah. Waiting to fly home. She was due to fly on Friday with Emirates, but they've cancelled all her flights. So she was lucky enough that someone tipped her off it was going to happen, and she managed to get one of the last economy seats in the Qatari flight home. So she's going to take off in about 30 minutes. Okay. Now they obviously...
And she's coming back from Australia to Dublin, and she's a medic?
She's a qualified doctor, and she's probably down there. She's qualified 2 or 3 years, and you know the way to go away for
It was a big phenomenon, The government were lamenting it.
Yeah, but there's 40-something of them trying to come home, Joe, and, you know, I don't think people actually realise all these kids are under contract, and the Australian authorities have been extremely generous letting them try to come home, even though it's very difficult.
Fair play.
The reason I'm angry is because we should be doing more to help them. Like, she had to pay $2,500 for her flight, but she's, look, they'll all pay us. Those sort of kids. But, you know, when they get home, we should be doing more to actually help them and help them get set up. Like, they're coming home really, you know, hoping to, you know, become part of the front line and help get this thing sorted. Harris, I think, did have something on his tweet last night about there was somebody trying to help them. But there is 40 of them out there still trying to get home.
And what I'm just trying to work out, how could we get them home?
Our flights are operating. Some of them are probably even more expensive. But, you know, if you had to pay $4,000 or $5,000 to get one of these kids home, it might seem, cheap in 3 months' time, you know.
I like.
But I mean, the authorities, she's under contract till November, and the authorities are letting these kids come home to help in their own country, which is extremely generous because they have the same problem themselves.
And the government have already announced that the schools, they haven't given an exact date, but the schools will not be opening next Monday. So this is.
My wife's a school teacher. She's online at the moment teaching her kids. That's kind of how it goes, you know.
When is the last time your daughter was home, by the way?
She was home. I think it was her last home. She came home about 4 months ago for a visit.
Okay. And are they all loving it in Australia, apart from this virus that has taken over the world?
They love the experience. But yeah. I mean, the Irish medical system encourages all kids, once they qualify, go overseas and get experience before you come back and settle into whatever you want to do, you know, as you're training for the rest of your life. So, yeah, she absolutely loved the experience, but she's very much a home girl. Like she misses home.
Yeah, Well, thank her for her service when you're talking to her. I hope she gets home safely.
Probably won't be allowed to see her, Joe, because she's been quarantined for 2 weeks and then she'll be on the front line.
And where is she going to go for self-isolation?
She'll go home. Her mother lock her in the room. Don't worry.
Okay. Dermot, kind regards to you and your family. Thanks indeed. Luigi Barcelina. Luigi, good afternoon. You're a pharmacist in Cork.
Correct.
Tell us your story over the last few days, Luigi.
Basically, there've been a couple of manic weeks where the people were looking to get their medication in advance and stocking up on paracetamol and other medications. And then towards the end of last week, we started to see sick people coming in.
Sick people?
Yeah, people with virus. We had at least three people that they came in. One had the common sense to wait outside, but the other two, they just came in, and one was waiting for a test, one was discharged from the hospital after being released with the virus. And I don't know, these people are not understanding that they should send somebody else to get this medication in the pharmacy, because these endanger everybody.
And how are you now? If sick people were coming into your...
I don't know. That's the truth. Thursday last week, despite having taken precautions for about a week now, Thursday last week, one of my colleagues started to have a sore throat. The doctor told her to stay home and wait for the test that she only got yesterday. And still the results are not available. I started to have a sore throat yesterday, thinking doctor told me to stay home, so I'm currently self-isolating. And this is obviously very disruptive for the public, but I can't endanger the public and the other staff member. So I'm waiting as well for the test that, thankfully, for a care professional, is a little bit quicker, but it's still 48 hours waiting.
And the message is, if you're waiting for a test, you have to stay at home.
Yes, correct. What I don't understand is what is the Irish government waiting for to enforce a full lockdown. I'm Italian, as you might have mentioned, and I've seen everything that has been said. I'm hearing everything that has been said now. I've heard it already 2-3 weeks ago in Italy. Same thing.
Yeah.
And nothing has worked apart from a full lockdown. I do not understand the rationale behind delaying this full lockdown, because the sooner you enforce it, the less people will get sick, the less people will die, and the sooner it could be lifted. The more you wait, the more people will get sick, the more people will die. You still have to enforce it at some stage, and the longer it will be, because there will be more people around. At the moment, we are seeing the numbers of a week ago. We're not seeing the numbers of today, because there is a backlog. What the Irish government wanted to do is what Korea did, South Korea did, so testing everybody. But there's no capacity for doing this here. So
when you say complete lockdown, what do you mean?
I mean, people in Italy have been in full lockdown for 2 weeks, meaning they can't leave the house apart from going to grocery shopping or pharmacies. There are some people employed in essential services as well that obviously can go to work. But as of 3 days ago, even non-essential factories have been shut down under the example of China, because still that wasn't enough. Because in a lot of work environment, doesn't matter the distance that you keep, even if you do keep it, but still you are often in very close environment. So you are for a long period of hours in a closed environment. Uh-huh. So the distance doesn't matter anymore.
So in your in the lockdown you're calling for, could people go to the park or the beach or
no,
the mountain?
No, absolutely.
Is that a yes or no?
No, they can't.
They don't leave the house?
No, they don't leave
home.
The house.
They're looking at, yeah, okay.
Yes, and Joey, this seems incredible 2 weeks ago in Italy. And I understand your perplexity. And you're like, oh, what do you mean? I can't go. What's the problem in not going out? But the numbers kept on growing.
Okay.
Why? Because people go to the beach, go to the park, and naturally they go close by.
Yeah.
Like, it's as simple as this. And now I'm looking out my window and there's lots of people walking about.
Mm.
And everybody feels entitled to that. Well, if they're walking, I'm going walking. And everybody's going walking. And so you have a gathering, a natural gathering of of people.
And you're saying despite the best will in the world, if people are out, they will be closer than they...
The outbreak initially was in China, okay?
Yeah.
And then the first nation in Europe was Italy.
Yeah.
Now, Italians, and I say this for first-hand experience, they're not the best in following the rules.
I did not.
No. It's well known, unfortunately. Or in some cases, fortunately, because thankfully we're not under a regime.
Mm-hmm.
But as a lot of people might imagine and know, Chinese people are quite strict in following the rules, and the Chinese government is quite strict in enforcing the rules. And still, that didn't matter and didn't make any difference until the country went in full lockdown. Mm. That it lasted for 2 months, and only in the last week we are seeing the numbers closing to zero. So I understand Irish people are quite a majority. I'd say they've been keeping a distance, and they're quite there is a great will and a great civic sense from the majority of the Irish people. But there's no country in the world that can leave the health, the destiny of millions of people in the hands of the public will.
So you say the lockdown at only essential factories open, is that correct? Only essential workplaces?
Correct. And the sooner you do it...
Nobody to leave their house except under that once to go shopping, one
correct.
Person. Yeah.
Correct. From what I've read, that's pretty much what Boris Johnson said, except... For, I don't know, he still hasn't defined really essential place of work. But they left in place the exercise rule in Italy, so that there were runners around for the last 2 weeks, and that had an impact because people are now running, they're sweating, they're spitting, they're coughing, like. And again, if the sole runner on the top of a week-long mountain, it won't make any difference. But if you have a runner that goes around Dublin, then you have two runners because the other guy goes, yeah, I'll go as well.
Okay,
and the other guy says, I'll go as well.
Okay, well, I hope, Luigi, just allowing us to hear, I hope, thanks for that salutary message, by the way, and kind regards to you and to the great people, your friends and colleagues and relatives in Italy. At this awful time, Luigi Barcelina, Luigi, thank you indeed. Let me go to London now, Nicola Kelly in South London. Nicola, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe, how are you?
Oh God, you don't sound the best.
No, I know, very croaky. Yeah, it's day 5 for me here in self-isolation. So I'm in bed as we speak. My symptoms seem to be getting worse and worse as the days go by. So it started with just, a bit of a headache, nothing really out of the ordinary. Then a bit of a cough, just kind of individual coughs here and there. And then today, I mean, over the last couple of days, it's real kind of coughing fits, you know, and bad fever in the night, and, you know, not sleeping so well, and dehydrated and stuff. So, I mean, all the major symptoms, although it's sort of worth saying, I haven't actually had a test yet because we're not conducting those in the UK yet.
So. Oh, have you asked for a test?
Well, no, I mean, we have to be in self-isolation for 7 days for those who are showing symptoms and 14 for those who are living with that person. So, I mean, I wouldn't say I'll be better in a couple of days, so I won't be leaving the house. We're in lockdown now anyway, as of today. Yeah. Makes no real difference to us because we're in self-isolation anyway. So I haven't asked for a test yet. My symptoms are, I think, would be considered mild. So, you know, unless it's critical, I don't think it's really.
And you have to cough, you have to fever.
Yeah, I've all of them. Yeah. All the things that you have to tick off, I've got all of them. So. Yeah.
And have you anyone there with you, Nicola?
Yeah, my boyfriend's here. He's cooking a curry in the kitchen as we speak.
Okay.
He's a teacher, a primary school teacher. So he's the school's closed here last week. Which I think everybody thinks was too little too late, really. I mean, the schools, I think Belarus, Sweden and the UK were the only ones still with their schools open. So, so he's working from home here now for the next 12 weeks or so. So I have someone to tend to me, yeah.
Okay. And are you from Ireland originally, Nicola?
I'm not. I mean, my parents are Irish. Dad's from County Louth.
And where are they?
They're in southwest London, so they're about an hour and a quarter away by train. So frustrating, they're down the road and I can't see them.
Yeah.
And underlying health conditions and stuff makes that more complicated. So, her Mother's Day yesterday. So
yeah, it's Sunday.
Yeah, it's a shame not
and
to
you're
see
a,
them.
And you're a producer of the BBC World Service.
I am. We had you on.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, was you?
We had you on a while ago.
Yeah, it was. Right. Yeah.
We had you on about the story. I think her name was... Maybe it was Eileen, but I'm not
sure. Oh, yeah, the wonderful Eileen who found
the lady,
who found her 104-year-old
mother.
She found
her mum at 103, 104.
Yeah.
So we did one then a few months ago.
One of my favourite radio stations in my ear, all day, all night especially, unfortunately. it's a great, great service to the world. The world's radio station. That's the tag, isn't it, Nicola? And how's the BBC, what's happening in the world servers? Are people operating from home or?
Well, we're on the list of key workers in the UK. Okay. So that means that broadcast critical staff, so people who work on news programmes like me, would sort of fall into that category.
Okay.
I haven't been able to go into work, obviously. We're now having one producer of five work from home if they show symptoms, and then we replace the others that can't work. So, you know, pared back service. The presenters are obviously having to stay as fit and healthy as they can. Mm-hmm. So your counterparts and it's a pared back service, but we're concentrating on just keeping it running as close to normal as possible.
And a lot of the presenters are Irish. Neula McGovern is brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
I work on her show, OS.
OS in the afternoon, coming from the centre of the BBC newsroom.
Absolutely, exactly.
Yes, and that's a 4 o'clock every four till late. Yeah. It's an incredible service. Neula McGovern's great, by the way. And our own brilliant Audrey Carvel, didn't she work in the BBC World Service? So
It's a great
community. Nicola, mind yourself. By the way, has your chap managed to look out on the street? Have you noticed a discernible difference today?
He's doing nothing but, really.
Yeah, and what's he seeing?
he's seeing... just people like a mum earlier took her kids out to the tennis courts, like... in the park behind the house. So he was sort of shouting updates into me in the bedroom. People walking their dogs and stuff. But, I mean, it seems from the street that people are observing the social distancing. Long may that last.
Nicola, I hope you get through this quickly.
Thank you.
Thanks for your conversation. And
we'll have you on soon on a World Service.
Thanks for your service as well. And the great work the BBC does. Thanks indeed. That's Nicola Kelly in South London, 51551. Wash your hands. Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And a bit of good news, John Boyne and all his crew of merry men and women have agreed to extend the deadline for the 300-word short story competition to 5 p.m. tomorrow. Already 4,000 entries in. So you have now until 5 p.m. tomorrow. johnboynestory@gmail.com. One word, johnboynestory@gmail.com. Will you spread the word on Twitter or whatever to your friends? Some people were upset about they felt the 5 o'clock yesterday was too short notice. So 5 o'clock tomorrow, 4,000 entries so far, an incredibly high standard from what people have seen so far. 300 words, three different categories. They'll all be up on Twitter again in a sec. You know the categories. But finish your story ASAP, but get it into John Boyne's story by 5 o'clock tomorrow, Wednesday, in the new world we live in. John Mollahan, you've sent us in a photograph. I can't see it, but go ahead, John.
Hello, Joe.
What did you see?
I saw this morning on my way in through Cork Street
in Dublin.
In Dublin, workers, yeah. Dublin 8, yeah. Cork Street, Dublin 8. After listening to Tom Parlin this morning on Sean O'Rourke explaining that it was very important that the construction industry keep going in the face of adversity and for the benefit of the HSE and all in the health services to provide extra beds and extra care. I waltzed down Cork Street this morning to see six lads sitting out on a lentil eating breakfast rolls at 10:30. Yeah. Side by side, if I can explain that, I suppose the picture was akin to what you'd see. You know, that picture where we watched the workers on the scaffoldings of the New York building.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Six of them side by side, with no separation whatsoever. And they were most certainly not working on any healthcare facility whatsoever. It was it's a residential apartment block complex. On both sides of the street on Cork Street, I saw probably the guts of 30, I'd say, altogether, 30 workers outside the site. I don't know how many are working inside it, but to listen to him this morning, it sounded like, I don't know if I could hear in the background, somebody preening his feathers on his angelic wings, or somebody recalibrating his halo, but it certainly is not the picture that exists at the moment.
So do you think all building sites should be shut? Should the National Children's Hospital be shut down?
No, I think that's a different thing. And I think if there are different definitely focused structures in place to prevent the spread, this is what it's about. It's not, what we don't want to be doing is filling the hospitals with workers on construction sites. It doesn't matter which construction site they come from or what construction site they're going to be working on. Hopefully, by the time the Children's Hospital is finished, this will all be gone. Yeah. But you know, a patient is a patient. It doesn't matter where they come from.
Okay, let me say, because now I'm looking at the calls, the trend during the programme has been, one, getting our medics back from Australia and other far-flung countries and get them working quickly without red tape strangling them all for 90 days. That's one big trend. And the other trend is people are saying construction sites should be shut down. John Walsh. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Your point, please.
Joe, just bringing in relation to the sentiments of the previous caller in relation to construction sites and workers, and just in relation to construction sites in general. Driving through South Dublin yesterday, I observed two construction sites. Workers were coming off it after finishing their shift at around 4:30, and they're all congregating, chatting freely on the footpath. And in one group I observed, there was 10 construction workers. Another group I observed, 6 construction workers. And like, it's just complete disregard of what the social distancing. And in circumstances in the country where we are now, where we're schools are off for an indefinite period, a number of workplaces are working for home, or just people have been laid off. But yet we have 100 to 150,000 construction workers in this country. A lot of them travel in convoy, transit vans to and from the workplace.
And you see, there's this phenomenon around the country, people might notice it, of near motorways, you'll see 20 or 30 cars parked, say, in a side road, where they all agree, they all come from different areas, park their car, and then one or two vans take all the workers to Dublin invariably.
Collection points,
yeah,
Joe.
Collection
yeah,
points.
Right. Yeah,
there's
exactly,
lots
yeah.
of them.
That's the way it works. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Dunleer, you'll see it in Dunleer. You'll see it in various different towns.
Okay, so you're. I know you were in construction and now in law, but John Walsh, are you saying clearly shut down construction sites, all of them?
Exactly, especially the larger construction sites. When you look at, there's one in the northeast of the country where there's up against 2,000 workers in that site. So that's 2,000 workers crossing paths with each other on a daily basis. Some of them are travelling convoy
yeah,
to the site.
Point.
But when
okay.
they get to the site, when they yeah. get to the site, you have to look at the canteen facilities.
Yeah,
you have
which
to look
was
at
mentioned
sanitation,
earlier. Yeah, that's where
sanitary
we started, yeah.
facilities, and even
okay.
changing room facilities. A lot of that's just for cross-contamination.
Okay,
and
okay. Well, let's see what happens at 4 o'clock. But the view of our listeners on, one, getting our medics back safely and quickly and without red tape, and two, shutting down construction sites is pretty clear at this stage. 51551.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Okay, John Byrne has decided to extend the deadline for the short story competition to 5 p.m. tomorrow. 300 words or less, johnbynestory@gmail.com. Thanks to all our staff again today. Nikki Dempsey was the sound broadcaster, coordinator was Doc Martin. The show today was produced by the series producer, Rebecca Mean. Special mention to Lewis and Ellis Berry. Is that their... Yeah, well, they know who they are. They're our producer's children, Lisa Marie Berry and Tara Lockery-Grant and her children as well, because Lisa Marie Berry's son redesigned my Twitter avatar to get in, wash your hands, and 51551. You can see it there at Joe Liveline. OK, back tomorrow, 1:45. Ray Darcy is next. Stay well.